Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of real entrepreneurs and who are listening while they're building their businesses, including today's guest who was listening when he was building his business. And one of the frustrations that he has with a lot of people who talk about how they built their businesses is they get to the end of the story before talking about the beginning. They don't spend enough time coming up with how and talking about the basics of how you get your first customer, where that comes from. And so he's going to do that here today. And I'm especially excited to talk to him because Rain Mahdi is creating something that I've asked other guests about. I've noticed more and more people who I interview are creating physical products. Every time I interview them, I get curious about the packaging. I get curious about how they get their product made, but also about the packaging. And the answer always feels like a quick blow up. I just Google it and you'll come up with it. Well, it turns out, no, there's a real business behind creating the packaging for the stuff that we're all buying. Well, that's what Rain's company does. It's called Hawk Packaging. They offer those flexible packaging solutions that you've seen on a lot of products. I invited him here to talk about how he's getting made, how he's selling them, how he's getting them to customers, how he's built up a business, and also a little bit about his background, how he ended up with a name like Rain and Mahdi. This interview is sponsored by two phenomenal companies. The first, if you need a phone system for your whole team, you got to go check out Ring Central. And if you don't think you need one, I'll tell you why they are doing gangbuster business over at Ring Central with companies like yours. And the second, if you need a landing page created that will help turn people from strangers into customers, check out ClickFunnels. We'll talk about those later. First, Rain, good to have you here.
Thank you.
Give me an example of the packaging that you create. Like, what's a customer that we can use as a case study here?
There are a lot of granola companies out there. I feel like, every day somebody reaches out about making packaging for their granola. So we might make a stand-up pouch for a bag like that. It's something that you see sitting on the shelf. There's a zipper at the top. It's got a cool, it's custom printed with their logo, their artwork. So that's a pretty simple
thing. All right. How much money are you guys bringing in? What's the revenue?
So this year, I think we'll do just under 2 million, which is nice. Last year, we did under 1 million. And so we've been pretty much doing 100% growth.
Okay, we're basically at the end of the year. Are you guys profitable?
Yeah. We've had to be since day one.
Net margins, are they, or net profit, is it more than 15, 20%? It is. Wow. Yes. All right. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
So yeah. You're doing well. I'm seeing the smile on your face, the smile of pride.
Yeah.
What's one thing you've been able to get for yourself or do for yourself because you're finally doing well?
Stability, peace of mind.
Do you really sleep better at night now that you're doing well? You do?
Absolutely. What? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I would say, I'm glad you asked me that question. I think that's probably the thing that's changed the most in the beginning of starting this business. Not having enough money to get by. And knowing that one slow month could essentially throw us out of the cycle, having a runway and knowing that even if we have 2-3 slow months, we're fine. That's that I can
when you didn't
much
sleep well at night
that way.
What were you doing? Waking up in the middle of the night? Were you drinking to help yourself fall asleep? What'd you do?
No. Actually, it's funny that you asked that. I stopped drinking before I started this business because I knew that in order for me to pull this off, it was going to take the very, very best in me. So I haven't had a drink in over
just
3 years.
Full on focus.
Full on focus. I just knew that like trying to pull this off in an industry that I didn't know with no money and no connections, no experience. I knew that I could do it, but it wasn't going to be 95% me that pulled it off. It was going to be 110% me. And I don't like to have regrets. So if I tried at 110% and failed, I'd be okay with that. But I didn't want to be like, you were hungover half the time. But what I'd be doing at night would just be working. I started this thing thinking it was going to be easy. I'm going to buy stuff in China. I'm going to sell it to people in the U.S. And I'm dealing with customers during the day and I'm dealing with China at night. You know what I mean? So it's a 24-hour
thing. So it wasn't
like
you were waking up in the middle of the night out of fear. It was more like you couldn't get to go to sleep at night because you had so much to do. Before you were doing this, you were working for a juice company. What'd you do for them?
Everything. I mean, it's a small business, so I wore a lot of hats. I was brought in to be an assistant. I started my job there as a juice bottler.
Literally,
that was my job
taking
when
bottles,
I started there.
Putting juice in them, shutting them.
Taking a half gallon, like a milk jug, they made green juice, like a blended green juice, right out of kale and all this other stuff. And so I would take a bottle. And I would put a funnel in it, like the kind that you put gas in your car or something, right? I'd put the funnel in the bottle. I would pour juice from a big bottle into a small bottle, put a cap on it, and set it to the side. That's what I got hired to do.
And then how did you end up in packaging for them?
Well, so... A couple weeks after I started working there, I ended up working side by side with the owner one day. We were a man short, so he came in to help me blend juice, which was funny. And so we start talking, and I think he quickly realized there's more to me than just being a juice bottler. We're talking about books, you know, books we've read, business books. And he goes, okay. So he knew he was going to need a guy to grow his business. Pretty soon, he invited me to come and start a sales program for him and to help manage the kitchen. And then that just eventually grew into me kind of doing everything. At some point, there wasn't a conversation that he would have without me by his side. I did all the hiring. I did all the firing. Wow-wee. Everybody.
And so you needed a flexible bag for him. Why?
Right. Yeah. Thanks for keeping me on track. So, so part of what I would do is I would purchase everything. And so I was purchasing stuff like, actually I always keep this on my desk. It's funny. This was the bag that we made there. Uh-huh. Right. So we would make these little bags and fill them with little protein powder and seal them. I was also buying bottles and cooler bags and all this stuff that we would use. And we were buying it all from distributors. I just used the contacts he already had lined up when I took over the purchasing. And I started realizing as the stuff was coming in that all the boxes said made in China. And I had done business in China before, as you may be familiar with my story. And so it just kind of clicked for me that I said, all these U.S. distributors we're buying from, they're just buying the stuff in China, reselling it to us at a premium. I could probably figure that out. And so I did figure that out and saved the business about $250,000 in the first year. And
How happy was he? And he must have loved you for doing that.
Right. Yeah, you would think. he was a very interesting...
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. Interesting guy, but no, he didn't show me the appreciation I expected. Definitely, there was a disconnect there between what I had felt I accomplished and how he treated the situation. So there was nothing. There was no handshake, high five, nothing. Maybe a nod or something like, "Oh yeah, cool." But that was.
And you said,
it.
"You know what? This is valuable. I think I could do something with this." Once you realize you could create it for him, and that's what led you to start this business. Let me pause for a second, though. You mentioned China. What was your experience with China before?
Okay. So if we rewind a little bit, there was a point in time where I was just starting to get a little, I was just starting to kind of dip my toe back into starting a business. And I had this idea that I wanted to import, this is like 10 years ago. I wanted to import these watch phones that I had seen somewhere online. And I didn't even know if they were real or if it was just something I saw online. And I remember I talked to my dad one day and I asked him, hey, you know, this is an idea and I have, I don't know where to find these things. And he basically gave me the idea that I should look to China because he had a partner who bought stuff in China. This was back when like the Razor scooters first got hot and his partner was bringing in containers of Razor scooters or probably knockoffs. Uh-huh. I don't know. But he was basically like, you should think about that. And I was like, wow. And so it clicked for me. And so I started Googling and it didn't take me long to find a website where I could find all these sellers in China. And so I was looking at the watch phones and as I started to evaluate that opportunity a little bit more, it just didn't seem like as good of an opportunity. There was so much shit I didn't know, like were they going to be compatible with the carriers once they came over? It was red flags all over it. I was like, I'm getting myself in over my head. But while I was there, I saw all these other products that were simpler and that I could wrap my head around. And I was like, oh, but all this stuff is cheap and the prices were blowing my mind. Like, oh, this is $3. This is $5. I can sell this stuff. So then I had an idea to start a real drop shipping website where I was like, I set up a website, I put all these products in it and I started selling them. And so that experience of connecting with all those sellers and factories in China and conducting business with them, payments, processing, transactions, shipping and all that stuff, that's where I got my first taste of how to deal with them. And honestly, whether it's on small scale or large scale, even now I would say it's the same when you're dealing with them, the business culture and the process, you know.
And so at this juice company said, I've got that experience. I'll go and direct from China, get the bags. If I can get all these watches cheaper because I'm going directly to China, I could probably do the same thing for bags.
Right.
You get it. He doesn't appreciate it. Right. And you say, I think there is a business in doing this. And what's the first step you took to get the business going?
Wow. That's a great question. So the first thing I did, I think the first thing I did was just say, okay, we got to set up a website, right? So that was my idea, was set up a website that was essentially just, this was going to be our flyer, right? My plan was set up a website, start emailing people that I think are using products that we could source overseas and start quoting them. That was it. That was pretty much it. Bring them in, show them what we do on our website, try to get the established contact and start sending out quotes and hopefully we can get somebody to order. So that was the first thing I did was
just plain like brochure type website. That's it.
The only function on the thing, there weren't even pages. Everything was on the homepage. The only function was a contact form.
And then how would you get anyone to go on the website or to buy from you?
Right. So that's where this cold email thing that I'm like, I figured out I was pretty good at. I figured that out at the juice company that I was good at these cold emails. But so I used that, right? I said, okay, I've got this experience of buying stuff from China. I see there's an opportunity here. I'm good at cold emailing people because I tested that and perfected that, or not, you don't perfect anything, but I really polished that skill at the juice company. And so I put those pieces together and I was like, okay, we'll start in this industry. I'll find the right contacts. I'll send them an email and basically say, hey, we can save you money on this. If they respond back, we'll get information. We'll get a quote for them. And hopefully we can get them to say, yeah, I'll send you some money.
And you were going to do anything. Anything that people needed from China, you were going to offer.
I had to. A, nothing stood out as being the best opportunity. And B, I just, you know, in order for it to work, we needed to get some money in. And I honestly, I guess my logic was, thinking back, that the act of sourcing, which was completely wrong, but the act of sourcing products is the same. It's cookie cutter. It doesn't matter what the products are. But what I quickly found out was that every single product has its own set of specifications and details.
Like what?
And all
you
these
told
little
the producer,
things that you
I would even
know.
Help order sanitized mushrooms. What is that?
Oh, no, not sanitized mushrooms. There was one of our early customers asked me if we could get them a machine. I forget what the machine is called. I wish I could remember, but it's a big old machine that you roll a big rack of mushrooms in and it sanitizes them or disinfects
them. And you said,
or whatever.
I think I could do that.
So, yeah, let me
Why
see.
Why is that so hard? What's the difference between that and getting somebody to make bags?
Yeah, exactly, right? You would think that. I mean, it just, you know, I get the question, but could you imagine how many things could go wrong with a complex piece of machinery if you don't understand wiring and computers and the types of metal and the hinges? And I mean, every little detail can go wrong.
I also feel like it's hard for anyone to get to know who you are and for the business to be anything. You become the guy who's just going to source things for you from China instead of the business that can do this one thing really well. If you need a bag, if you need something created to package your product and go to him. That
absolutely.
All right, let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor. Do you know Ring Central?
I hear you talking
about
that.
That's how you know them. You have salespeople yet?
Yeah.
And so your salespeople, what, they have their own cell phones or use a different app? What are you using for calls?
We have 8x8. 8x8 is a voice over IP
system.
And
it goes to the landline or to the people's mobile phones as an app?
No, just through the computer. You can patch it to your mobile phone too, but just through your computer, just like I'm talking to you now, USB.
Because you want them to, when they get a call, to go directly into your system, when they make a phone call, for it to come from your system, right? Here's what I like about Ring Central.
And we have people that work everywhere, too, so that works.
The beauty about RingCentral is no matter where they are in the world, you can have a local number. Like if I'm here in San Francisco, I wanted a 415 number. But you know what? Andrea's not in San Francisco. I don't know that she wants me to tell anyone where she is. But she could have a 415 number, too. And that's my assistant. And the person who's making calls for us, the sales calls for us, can have a 415 number, too. Everybody can have a same, either a company-wide number that then goes out to everyone. And in addition to that, they could also have their own personal number. That is the beauty of it. And then you can automatically record calls so you can make sure that you're watching what people are saying and then start to analyze it, have it transcribed if you need to. You could have all your voicemail go into a bucket that other I want for me, voicemail that my assistant Andrea can check. I also want text messages. I'm finding the more and more the business that we're doing is happening by text message. And I don't want it to go into my personal text inbox and then have me go through it, because look at this. Let me see how many unread text messages I've got right now. I have, as of today, 100. How many do you have? I have 152 unread text messages. What is that?
I have zero unread text messages. I read my text messages. but I feel
it just
like
keeps
your network
coming in.
Much
I can't stop
mine.
It. And also, I want to reach out to people via text message. So I initiate a conversation. I can't say a week later, or a month later, or a year later when they text me back, hey, I can't respond to it. It's just overwhelming. But I do want my assistant to be able to go to text messages too. I want all of that to come in one beautiful package. And that's what I love about RingCentral. Anyone out there who needs a phone for everyone on their team, you got to go check out ringcentral.com/mixergy. If you do, the whole thing starts as low as $19.99. They'll give you a big discount on it. And they're going to give you, they say phone, fax. I don't think fax matters that much. I do like that they also do video conferencing, and the video conferencing is from Zoom, which is what we're using to record this interview. And there's so much more that's included in there. I love the text messaging. If you go and sign up, you'll get that low price and you will not have to pay a single penny until 2020. That's ringcentral.com/Mixergy. RINGRING. Central.com/Mixergy.
You can do it, Andrew.
You know what? The reason I have to spell it is because I talk so fast. I've been listening to my own interviews, Ray.
Yeah.
I do talk too freaking fast, especially for the sponsor name. I need to slow it down and say Ring Central. Sure. But I don't. I've got to actually be really disciplined about it. In fact, here's what I'm going
to
do.
You don't have to do anything, Andrew. You got almost 2,000 interviews and people love you. I think what you're doing is working.
I want to improve and improve and improve. And I've been listening to podcasts when I'm asleep, and occasionally my podcast will come on as I'm going to sleep and I'll listen to it. I go, this is good. It's the guest, it's the sponsor names that I need to go slow. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write down on this piece of paper here, slow with sponsor. Do you do that too? Do you have like one note that you keep on your desk to try to remind yourself to do it?
A lot of notes.
Are you a self-improvement guy? What's the thing you're working on right now?
The thing that I'm working on right now the most is, I don't know if I'd call it time management, but really sticking to my list. It's funny that you bring that up. Literally, that is the night and day difference for me in productivity. If I come in and I sit down in the morning and I just start going at it, I'm going to flail around and maybe get 5-6 things done. And at the end of the day, when I leave, I go, man, I could have done all that in 3 hours. If I come in and I write down a list, and not just write down a list, but prioritize it. First, I'm going to do this. Then I'm going to do this. I'm not going to open up that other tab. I'm not going to jump onto that. I can get so much done before lunch. I feel like I don't even need to come back.
You know what? I'm with you. And then something will distract me. More likely it's someone else who needs something urgently that will distract me.
Yeah,
I have my assistant go through my email with me. I wonder if what I need to do is do a Zoom call, screen share, and then have somebody go through my task list with me. You know, I'm going to pay you. All you have to do is just keep me on task. Stay with me. If I have a question that will then go down a rabbit hole, the fact that someone else is watching will keep me from going down that rabbit hole. Because you're right.
How often do you, and this is a really important thing, and I'm trying to really be disciplined about this. How often do you ask yourself when your team asks you for guidance on something, or when you're doing something, how often do you ask yourself if they could be doing that themselves, or somebody else could be doing it, or if somebody asks you a question? This is all kind of the same thing. If somebody asks you what they should do, do you just give them the answer, or do you ask them what they think they should do and make them come up with the answer themselves? This is all about getting the freedom and of not being relied upon.
I know that's one of the things you're wrestling with. I'll tell you that one thing that's helped me and hurt me was all the travel I've done this year to do a marathon on every continent. The fact that I'm so disconnected because I'm in a place like in South Africa with no internet access has meant that someone on the team needs to go through my task list and say, you know what, someone else should do this. And that's been a huge help to be full on disconnected so that they can't ask for stuff and I can't get sucked into it.
That's good. Yeah. I've been too available at times, and now I'm working on this other project. And so it's forced me to be less available. So that's been good.
What's
for
the other
everybody,
project?
I think.
You mean you'll tell me in private or you'll tell me now?
I'll tell you in private.
All right. So let's come back then to this. Oh, by the way, your name, how'd you get a name like Rain living in San Diego?
I'll tell you actually the truth of it. So my last name is Mahdi. My dad is from Little Rock, Arkansas, and his birth name was Allen Higgins. And he comes from a family of 8 or 9. And somewhere along the way, when he was a teenager, half of his family, brothers and sisters, converted to Islam. So half of them are still Higgins and they're Christian, and the other half is Mahdi. My uncle Abu Mahdi was the business manager for Muhammad Ali. And so half of my family is Mahdi and the other half is Higgins. And so that's how I got the last name.
Were they mainline Muslims, or was it something else?
Like American,
like Nation of Islam, right? Because Muhammad Ali went both
ways.
Not
anymore. They
were, and then, and Muhammad Ali, wasn't he Nation of Islam? And then he went right.
And I think they followed the same path. Like if you go to my dad's masjid now, it's mostly like Middle Eastern.
Got it. That's why I asked, just because of the Muhammad Ali connection. Okay, so go on. You were telling me a little bit about your background.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but that's about it. And then the name Rain is a nickname, and it came from, I'm from like the North County, San Diego area. And there's this business called Rain, R-A-Y-N-E, not like mine, R-A-I-N-E. And they have a billboard that's out in front of their business, and their business is right on the freeway. So you drive past it all the time. And they put these little sayings up there that just really, really make you think. Inspirational stuff, thought-provoking stuff, and it hits you out of nowhere. And there was a day that I just thought to myself, I aspire to be a person like that, that maybe unexpectedly you come across me and I make you think about something, or I mention something thought-provoking. And I just thought that was a really cool way to be. I thought that was an interesting way to be, and kind of like aspired to be that. So that's really where that.
Are you close to your dad?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not as, I'll be honest, I'm not as close as I wish I was. I love him to death. And he's one of the, when there's certain things that I need in life, he's the only person in the world who can give it to
like
me.
What?
He's one of the most
spiritual and spiritual grounding.
Spiritual grounding. Yeah. When I'm not often lost. I've been through a lot in my life and I've found my way. So there's not many times where I find myself lost or distraught. But in those very rare instances where that happens,
like
he seems to be the only person who can help
me. When did that happen?
One time that stands out in particular is, it actually pertains to this business. So early on, we were lucky enough to get, an order. From, I won't mention the company, but we got an order from this company very early, like within the first couple of months of getting, you know, of launching. And it was a $55,000 order for these little plastic containers, custom plastic containers with labels that are inserted into the injection. It was the hardest kind of thing that you could possibly make. A custom molded, custom shaped plastic container that had to snap airtight, and printed labels that are inserted into the injection mold. It's called in-mold labeling, not stickers on the outside, but inside them. I mean, the hardest thing you could possibly make, right? In terms of packaging, it probably is one of the hardest things you could make. So we got this big order. And long story short, it was supposed to be done in 3 months. 8-9 months later, we were still dealing with this nightmare. I mean, I lost 10 years of my life easily. And in the very end, the person who we were partnered with at the time to produce this stuff, who we didn't realize wasn't a factory, they were just a trading company in China, and they were very loosely connected to this factory, which was the source of a lot of these issues. They had messed this thing up so bad that the only way the customer was willing to pay their balance was if we gave them a $10,000 discount. So I went back and fought like hell with these guys and said, look, you guys know you've screwed this thing up every single step along the way. You need to give the customer this discount, or else you're not going to get the money that, you know, we're not going to get the balance on this thing. You've got to pay it. And they fought it, they fought it, they fought it. Eventually, they finally agreed to it and they said, okay, you know, pay the balance and we'll do it. And with the money we had in the account, that was probably close to all the money we had, was the money that they had wired to us for the balance. I told them, here's the discount, gave them the $10,000 off. They wired the money. We had the money in our account. I was so scared because these guys, we had completely stopped giving them quotes. They knew this was the last thing that we're doing with you guys and we're done with you, because they had messed up everything, right? This was a tough lesson that I learned about how to, you know, pick guys overseas. And, so we wired them the money hesitantly, and I got an email after the money cleared. They said, hey, this person that you've been working with no longer works here. And my boss says that you've cost us a lot of money with these discounts on orders that they've screwed up. And until you pay this, this, and this, we're not going to ship your product. So they wanted the $10,000 back. They wanted $3,000 from some other order. So they wanted all this money, or else they were holding the goods hostage. When I got, I'll never forget this, Andrew, and I didn't get to share this the last time I shared my story, and I really kind of wished I had included this because this was the lowest point. When I woke up in the middle of the night to that email and I opened it and I read it, and I had been on pins and needles anyway, just anticipating something like that might happen because I knew the temperature of the situation. When I opened it and I saw that email and I knew what was transpiring, my hands were shaking. This has never happened to me. I'm a very stable person. I mean, my hands were shaking. If I was ever going to have a heart attack, that was the closest that it's ever happened, because I thought to myself, well, what if these guys never ship the stuff? Then I owe these guys, you know, $45,000-$50,000. Am I going to go to jail? I don't have this money. Am I going to have to call this customer and tell them I'm going to make payments to you? Like, that was the scariest shit that ever happened. And my dad was the only one who could kind of
how did he get you past that?
Well, I called him crying the next day. I just didn't know what to do. And again, this is, you know, not something that happens often with me, but yeah, I was, and I'm not ashamed. I'm not trying to make excuses for it. I'm sharing it openly, but yeah, this is a hard point. And, I don't even remember what he said, to be honest. I can't tell you word for word what he said. It wasn't like he gave me some banner advice that like I can say, well, I took that with me for the rest of my life. I think he probably just told me what I needed
just
to hear.
Having him just there as a presence that, was
just having him there and invoking some calm and some sensibility and some logic into the
doing?
Situation. So I ended up putting all the money that I had to pay these guys on credit cards and paying them their money. And they shipped the stuff
at that point you believed enough in your business that you were going to invest all that money to keep the business going.
Oh, absolutely. I'm all or nothing with everything I do. All or nothing. I mean, I'm not going to jump out in front of a moving truck. You know, I'm not an idiot. But yeah, of course I believed in it. That was an isolated situation. That wasn't a failed business model. That was just a mistake.
I got to ask you a personal question. Your dad, Alan Higgins.
Totally. Adib Mahdi.
What?
That's his
name.
Mahdi.
That's it. That's what.
Name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so yeah, who's yeah. Alan Higgins then?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was him before. Oh, got it. Got it. I was Googling him, and that's how I have it in like the last half. He didn't raise you growing up. How are you not resentful? I know you talked about before that you had a tough childhood. How are you not resentful that he wasn't there for you when you know how much of a presence he could be for you?
It wasn't his fault. And I can say that in hindsight, it wasn't his fault. And I knew it at the time. It wasn't his fault. Well, so without, you know, I really don't want to speak negatively on anybody, but just, you know, it was kind of a classic mistake that people make. Some people make when parents split up and one of them takes their animosity out on the other. And sometimes that's in the form of withholding custody or withholding the child. Sometimes a kid gets stuck in the middle.
You're saying they broke up and your mom held on to you as a way of spiting your dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And you knew that at what point in your life?
Oh, I mean, I could tell you some stories that are just disturbing. She would make me call him and write stuff on post-its and make me tell him stuff. That and why didn't you come and pick me up and why aren't you paying my mom and why aren't you this?
Was
and
any of that true?
All kinds of crazy stuff. Mostly no. Mostly no. And there was one time in particular that this is probably one of the most visual things that I have in regard to all that is, so my dad had finally said, you know, this trying to work it out between us as far as seeing my kids not working. So let's go to court. So he went to court, he got custody. They gave him every other weekend. He would show up on his weekends and my mom would always give him a hard time. And finally one weekend he came, she just basically flat out said, no, you're not coming to get him. So he drove back home 45 minutes to his house, came back with his paperwork, court paperwork, and called the police. They came to the door. She knew they were at the door. She took me to my room and basically grabbed me and was like, if you go with him, I'm going to this, that, whatever. I don't know. I blacked out. I don't even know what she said, but basically tried to just scare the shit out of me and say, hey, you know, if you go with him, because that's how much it was important for her to win this thing with him. And so we went back up, she let the police in, my dad walks in and the cop goes, hey, we're gonna leave it up to him, what do you want to do? And she's standing there, he's standing there, I'm like, I don't want to go. And my dad's like, it was heartbreaking. And my dad's like, you know, he's trying to entice me, we're gonna go here and we'll go do this. I'm like, no, I don't want to go. I can't even look up at him. I can picture it right now. I can't even look at him
because you're feeling so guilty.
And he goes, feel so guilty. But obviously, you know, him and I have had plenty of discussion and I'm a grown man now and I have kids myself, and he knew what was happening. He's one of the smartest, most insightful guys I've ever known in my life. He knew exactly what was happening. And at that moment, I mean, he tried a couple other times to see me and it was kind of a similar outcome. And at some point that's when he just decided, I'm causing my son more stress by trying to be in his life, because every time he'd come around, I'd get in trouble. Right. And so he just said, I'm going to back up. And at some point he'll grow up, he'll know what the truth is, he'll know what happened.
So then did you get resentful of your mom then for all that?
Absolutely.
Do you have a relationship with your mom now? No, because of all this resentment. Why do you think she did it?
Not just because of the resentment, in all honesty. I mean, we carried a relationship until just a couple of years ago, but she still has a lot of the same behavioral traits. And she's just very, very stubborn person and very kind of selfish in the way that she doesn't care who she hurts. If she has something to say about you, whether it's right or wrong, she's going to say it. And a lot of times it's not right. She just has a weird logic, you know. So I could easily accept an apology from her and let it go because I don't harbor things. But you can't accept an apology from somebody if they continue the same behavior, right? If I slap you, and then I say, I'm sorry, you can decide if you want to accept that apology. But if I say, I'm sorry, and I slap you again, like at some point you should go, okay, well,
did this drive you or was it something you had to overcome?
It was something I overcame. Self analysis. I spent a lot of time in my room by myself growing up. I was kind of like isolated. I wasn't allowed to go to anything. I never went to a high school dance. I never went to a football game, not one. I never went to a party. I never got to do anything. I had to stay in my room. And that gave me a lot of isolation and time to think back and reflect on things that happened and make sense of them and understand what was right and what was wrong. And I guess I feel lucky in the sense that I came to the right conclusions about what made sense, what was right, what was wrong. I think there are people who sit in that room and they come to a different conclusion and commit suicide. You know, I just happened to come to the right conclusion that like, that wasn't right. I'm going to learn what not to do from this and moving on, you know, and I left home when I was 16. So I just kind of got out of there.
And that's when you got that job? The one at the juice company? Or was there were other jobs before that?
No. That was, yeah. So here's what I guess you could say did happen in my life, probably due to that. I was stuck in the room. I was like having a bear in a cage. And I did have, I'm sure, some emotional issues and whatnot. So when I finally did move out of my house, there was nothing good going on for the next 10 years or so.
It 10
was
a wasted lot of years. Party?
Absolutely. That's the
why do you think you partied? I feel like if I partied, the thing that would get me doing it is the sense that I need to have a bigger life and be a bigger man. And you know, when you're partying and you're able to take on the drinking where other people can't and stay out later, right, it makes you feel bigger. Well, what do you think it was for you? I know that's what it was for me.
That's a good question. I think it was two things. I think one, I just needed some joy.
Really?
I think I just needed some happiness. I think I needed to go be with friends, hang out, smile, laugh. I had a fucking blast. I had a good time. I didn't have much joy in my life before that. So I just needed to go be happy. And I think I finally got my fill of happy at some point. And then I started having a family and said, now I want to go. Now let me get back to where
after
I was.
That,
right? Let me
after get back you had track. Your family. And back to where I was kind of reminds me of what you told our producer. You said, look, even as a kid, I convinced the guy who opened a restaurant next to me to pay me money to go hand out flyers. That's who you are.
That happened when I was
that resourceful
kid.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, look, me and my mom, there were good times too. I don't mean
Give
to
me
paint
a good
just
time.
A horrible picture. Well, our favorite thing is she's very, very ambitious. And both of my parents are entrepreneurial, started businesses. My mom always had some little side business or business she was running. And my dad is a general contractor now. He runs his own business. So that's always been a part of me. But one of the great things that my mom and I used to do is it was like Shark Tank, man. I was pitching ideas to her left and right. And she just supported those ideas all to hell. I mean, she was so good at convincing me that whatever it was that I was doing was amazing. If I told her an idea, she
like what?
Convinced
tell
me,
the,
me that
tell
it
me
was
the donut
best
story.
Idea. Okay, so that was the first thing that actually kind of got put into practice, right? So we were just, every morning she would take me to this donut shop, give me a donut on the way to school. This was in, you know, eighth grade. And one morning we get to the drive-thru at the donut shop and there's a sign in the window that says a dozen day-old donuts for $1. Now, one donut was $1. So you could get one donut from today for $1 or you could get 12 donuts from yesterday for $1. And we all know there's nothing wrong with 12 donuts from yesterday. So goes, hey, instead of giving you $5 for lunch today, how about I buy you this dozen donuts? And if you can go sell them, then there's your lunch money. Plus you can eat a donut. I was like, perfect. Right. So I was super excited about it. I couldn't wait to get to school. And within, you know, a week or so, there was a line when I got to school in the morning of people waiting to get donuts and
for
I would sell out. 75 cents usually. I know it must have been quarters because after I would sell out, if there was still time before school, then I would start gambling. Then we would like pitch quarters against the wall. I don't know what that game was, but I just
had
remember
so many quarters
against
it the was...
wall. I had a bag full, I had a pocket full of quarters.
You said your mom was entrepreneurial. What did she do? I thought that you guys grew up on welfare. Is that right?
Right. So, I mean, you know, I just, even from the beginning, you can see the entrepreneurial spirit in her. So she comes here, she doesn't know anybody, nothing. She spoke English because they were, you know, she was basically raised in England from the time she was like 12.
Because she was
so
from where?
It wasn't like she
where
didn't know
from originally?
English. She's from Iran. And she had a situation that happened, you know, there, and they kind of moved her away to boarding school when she was 12.
Really?
I couldn't do that to her.
The religious situation or?
No. Something in the family, right. Some kind of traumatic situation in the family, you know? And so that's in that time, you know, that's, and in that kind of culture, that's how you would deal with a situation that you didn't like is you would
have somebody just move out. She went to England on her own.
Yeah, they sent her to boarding school when she was 12. My family there has a lot of money, so they could afford that. My grandfather is like a president of an oil company in Iran. So they had money, and so they sent her away to boarding school. So she knew English. But anyway, she comes here. You know, her and my dad get divorced right away when I was still a baby, and she starts babysitting kids in the neighborhood to make money while she's watching me. So that's the only way on welfare she could make some money on the side and still, you know, be home to take care of me, because obviously she couldn't afford daycare. So I think just that, even that alone, just that kind of like problem solving, there's a real entrepreneurial aspect of just doing that alone. Then she, you know, became an accountant, and then she became a stockbroker. And when she lost her job,
she became a stockbroker. We're talking about what period this, what years?
Right. This is the late 80s, early 90s.
All right. Oh, late 80s was the time to be a stockbroker, right?
Dude, this is Wall Street shit. This is the
top of the food chain. This is back when the movie Wall Street was still like the thing that people aspired to be like. Gordon Gekko, the character. Totally. So you guys were living it up then? Were you living good?
I remember. So then we moved out of this shit neighborhood and we moved to La Jolla, which is, you know, still
really
to
nice.
This day, one of the richest neighborhoods in the world, probably. And we didn't own a home or anything there, but we had a really nice condo and it was absolutely a step up.
What's the one thing that you got for yourself that made you know you were different? Was it sneakers?
Oh, dude, everything was different. So we lived right across the street from this mall called UTC. It's still there now. And they had an arcade there called Yellow Brick Road. And every day my mom would send me over there with $20 just to play video games.
Yeah.
If I cleaned my room, I got $50. I had every video game you could think of. Our neighborhood was, to me, so nice. I mean, we lived in like a luxury apartment thing, but to me, it felt like we were in a mansion. It was just so much more, you know, it was so much beautiful. And my mom got this, you know, really nice sports car. The whole environment was different. We would go out to eat and, you know, have sushi every night. And spend
did you like sushi as a teenager? You did.
No, I wasn't a teenager yet.
And you still liked it. Wow.
I loved it. I loved it. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, that one's also that's also a time when sushi was the thing. That was like,
yeah, dude.
Yeah. You know what? I thought for myself it was sneakers
shit,
when my parents did well, but it wasn't. It was I would go to the pizzeria, to St. John's Pizza in Queens, and here's a $20 bill. Go buy as much pizza as you want, and it was just phenomenal, dude. Right? That little, and keep the change.
Oh man, dude, if you got $20 back then, that was $1 million.
Yeah, because how much
right?
more do you need? And it also made money not feel so significant, which was, I kind of liked it. I was also a saver, so I would always save all the change from that. Actually, I take it back. Yeah. It was $10 for pizza, and Queen's pizza is still to this day fairly inexpensive. $20 if you're going to see a movie. Yeah. It was just phenomenal.
So I don't mean to turn this thing on you. I thought you were from San Francisco.
I grew
you're
up
from
in
New
York
and
Queens.
Okay. And how did you end up there?
I don't know, actually. I should ask my parents. Maybe like my dad had a friend from somewhere who was in Queens or something. We definitely knew that New York, and I think to a much lesser extent today, New York was the capital of the world. That's where all the big money was, where all the big stories were. And now as I think about it, I tell my kids about New York, I realize it's not that anymore. It's not the place you aspire to. It's not the place of greatness. There's so many other cities around the world that are doing way, way better. If I'm in Singapore, for example, there's so much more wealth there. There's so much more happening. There's just, I don't know. I feel like New York has definitely fallen behind.
I think there's a thing that's going to happen with where we are in the internet age. And I sound old saying that, but I'm just calling it that for basics. I think this, The reason why, and I'm going to give you a quick philosophy on this, the reason why real estate is so expensive in these major metropolitan areas is why. It's because that's where the opportunity is, and people need to live close to the opportunity, right? Wherever industry is, that's where you need to live. Now, with the internet making industry everywhere and opportunity everywhere, do you know how many undervalued properties there are in Montana or the country in Tennessee? Dude, I feel like in time, very soon, those things are going to be valued at what they really are, a big old 5-acre plot of land, a big, beautiful house for $300,000-$400,000, but nobody wants it because they need to be in San Francisco. They need to be in San Diego. Well, really not anymore, right? So I think that's going
to
be a shift.
I'm seeing more and more. I'm seeing that happen more and more. Like I told my wife I wanted to go to Austin because I felt that Austin was growing. This was 6 years ago when we moved here. Mm. Now that we're here, and I never did like San Francisco that much, she said, all right, what do you think is the next city? I talk to people who are moving, and what I'm realizing is, you know, Rain, there is no next city. It's everywhere. When I'm traveling now, it is not at all unusual to see people either move to a cheaper place because it has more amenities, great internet, and they're willing to deal with the time zone, or just move around constantly. And it used to be a weirdo thing to do. It is not at all. And I think that the heart of America has got big opportunities too. These, like, if someone's from Iowa, to go back to Iowa and live inexpensively near your family and be great. I think that's a good opportunity, but also going to different countries where you could get by cheaper, or if you're not from the US, living where you were, because then you end up with all the tax benefits of not living in the US in many cases, and you get all the low costs. I can't tell you how many people I talk to from India who will, in private, talk about all the servants that they get to help them out, like to go get them food and lunch, to make them dinner and all that. What do they need to come to the US for? The US is making it hard for them to even come here to visit. Why bother coming? Right? They might as well stay where they are and just keep building it up from there. Totally. All right. We've gone way off track. We're going to bring it back on track in a moment. First, I've got to tell everyone about a company called ClickFunnels. Speaking of, I don't even remember where these guys, let me see, where's ClickFunnels from? It doesn't even matter. Because you know what? They're from all over the internet. Every time I pick up a freaking social media app or any other app, all I see is Russell Brunson's face, the founder of ClickFunnels. You know this guy? Here.
No, but their ads are all over my Instagram feed right now. Yeah. I think with Grant Cardone, who I despise.
I don't know Grant Cardone at all, but is he buying ads and getting in your feed?
Grant Cardone is like, I think he has like some sort of a sponsorship or partnership with ClickFunnels.
See, I don't even see that.
That 10X sales
guy. I know him.
Like
I was following
salesman.
Him for a bit and I'm glad I was, because it was interesting to see what he was doing. He was basically posting pictures of himself and his family eventually on jets and on interesting like private islands or something. It was all that. It's all the showy stuff, which was kind of cool to see from him. But ultimately, I didn't know what he was. And he would say, go check out Grand Capital. And I couldn't figure out what Grand Capital was. And I said, it's actually not helping me in any way. It's not inspiring me.
Maybe he got ClickFunnels after that, because I think he's gotten much better since then.
ClickFunnels is, they partner up with him to get like his crowd. They partner up with me to get my crowd. They partner up with like, they're these comedians who I don't even know who I guess have a big following on YouTube. They bought them out in some way. I don't know. So I was seeing that on, basically ClickFunnels is everywhere you are. That's where these guys are. Every app I'm in.
Wow.
And the guy, it doesn't matter that here he is. It looks like, according to the bottom of their website, they're from Idaho. Does it matter that they're in Idaho instead of San Francisco? No. Right? Because they're all over my Instagram feed. Here's what does matter. They create these phenomenal landing pages that will help you get more conversions because they have these beautiful templates. They see what works. And if it works, they keep it in the template pile. If it doesn't, they get rid of it. And so they make everything you do look good. Now, is it great for catching email addresses? Absolutely. I think you guys could use them. Absolutely, Rain, to collect email addresses. You'll get more. And I know you guys look for more than email addresses. You want phone numbers. But imagine if you then took the next step. After that, you guys offer a free sample, right? I wonder if is there room to say, we're going to charge you for something. So you understand who is worth spending a lot of time on. Maybe it's like a $1. We send you a bunch of samples in the mail right now. And now you've gotten to see who is really worth spending time on and who is not. The whole thing could be done within ClickFunnels. Smart. All you have to do is drag and drop the elements that you want. And all they do is take the best of the best conversion funnels, teach you how to do them, and then set you up with an easy way to create them. I say that first page, that landing page, I call it a landing page, I call it a squeeze page. They then want you to have a sales page after that, then an order page, a thank you page, every part of the funnel they've created in a beautiful way designed to improve your sales. I did over $1 million with one of these sales sets of pages. Yeah, look
wow.
at this. I haven't bragged about this in too long. Look at this. This is my ClickFunnels 2 comma club gold record. They sent it to me in the mail.
Wow. That's right. Badass.
Right.
Yeah, that's man. Nice, I didn't even know that we won it. I just said, let's go check and see if we did. Sure enough, we did. So
that's awesome. I wonder what kind of stuff I can give out to people like that. I like that.
This is one of the things that I like about Russell. He wrote this book about how to turn people into like this mass followers of your work. I'm going to call it like a cult-like following. And the freaking guy does it. Like now I'm in the Two Comma Club. Yeah. And so I talk like I'm in the Two Comma Club. He gives me a thing. I'm showing it off, right? Anyway. Yeah.
Like maybe there's like a certain number of downloads that's like your club, right? And like you can send somebody their interview has been downloaded.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, done. Trophies going out tomorrow.
I think everyone who's listening to me should go be in the Two Comma Club. It's much easier than you thought. You just go create a set of pages and, you know, I'm not going to pretend it's easy. It's easier than if you were to do it on your own because basically what they're doing is they're letting you copy the stuff that's worked for other people. Go to clickfunnels.com/Mixergy, steal my funnel, and get free trial with their software. clickfunnels.com/Mixergy will let you try their software for free. And finally, I did an interview with the founder. You'll get to see all the different ideas that he went through, all the different businesses he went through before he came up with ClickFunnels. I thought it was one of the most inspiring interviews I've ever done. ClickFunnels.com/Mixergy. Really good. Let's get back into business. I heard once you had this, you were like a cold calling machine. At first, you went way too long with your emails. And the problem with that was what?
So this was at the juice company, and this is when I'm testing my feet with writing cold emails. We were starting this affiliate campaign where we would try to get influencers. I don't think we were calling them that at the time, but we were trying to get influencers to use the product and to get a promo code and to share the promo code with their audience and, you know, classic shit, right? And so I was trying to reach out to these people cold, and the first emails that I'd send out to these influencers was like this huge novel about who we are and how the business started and why the product is so good and why their customers are going to like it. And it gets even better. We're going to give you a percentage of commission on every sale. And all you got to do is do this and blah, blah, blah. And like this whole thing and then send, right? And not one person replied to that. And so I realized that doesn't work. And then I started hacking it down. And next thing you know, it was one sentence and everybody was replying. And I would go, okay, well, that's the difference.
Yeah, I help people with their cold emails. They go way too long. A lot of reasons to follow up with them. I just can't convince them to cut it down. I guess you have to suffer sometimes in order to get to one sentence. And then to get to one sentence, you were starting to say, what does it take?
Right. No, exactly.
You're saying a lot of discipline to get to that one sentence.
It's very, very difficult. It takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of realism, I guess. You just have to, and it takes empathy. I think you have to look at what you're doing from the perspective of the reader, from the perspective of your prospect, your customer, and think what's important to them. Okay, now out of these five sentences, what's the most important to them? And balancing that out with what's going to be the most intriguing, whatever, but really just trying to get down to like, if I could tell you one thing, what is it? And I think for so many people in business in general, that's a very hard thing for them to do, is tell you the one thing.
For Hawk Packaging, what's the one thing?
Our approach is we keep it really simple. We say, hey, here are some rates and we'd like to send you some samples. Is this the right address? It's not as exciting as you would think it is, but what we do is there's a lot of actually thought behind it. What it is let's give you the pricing because I know that's one of the most important things. So let me show you that. That gets you excited enough to know that we are worth the conversation. And then I'm taking all the work out. You don't even have to type your address. Your address is right here. And let's send us some samples because those are the two things you care about first is price and quality. So let me try to put that in front of you as quickly as we possibly can. And if we can check those two boxes for you, then we might have a
conversation.
And
that's what your cold emails ended up being. That's what it is today. Now, yeah. All right. I heard that you were sending out these cold emails. Then you start to get calls during the day from people who wanted quotes. Is that right?
Right. So what we would do is, okay, so this is, let me give you just a quick rundown on how we kind of made that transition.
Yeah, tell me the early days. I want to hear, we started out by saying early days are tough. Break that early day down for me.
I'm realizing we really haven't gone there. So this is what happened. Okay. So I realized that this guy is not appreciating me, and the work that I did there and saving them all this money at the juice company. Right. I realized this. And instead of getting upset about it, I go, okay, I'm sure I could probably, if I could help this small business save this much money, there's thousands of businesses out there and I'm not relegated just to this local area. I can talk to anybody in the US. I'm sure I can find a few other people. I ran some quick numbers and said, okay, if I can make this much money, you know, if I save these guys $250,000, if I could even make $50,000 off of 10 people, I got a business and I'm sure I can get more than 10 people. So I'm off and running and set up the website. And I bring in my best friend, Danny, who is, he's partnered with me on pretty much everything. He's my guy that, like, whenever I'm starting something and I'm going to need some help, I go, Danny, get over here. We're going to do this. And he goes, okay, let's do it. Right. He never says no. So he's my guy. So I go, listen, Danny, this is what we're going to do. I wrote this email. So I started off by setting up the website, testing out the cold email, refining it down, finally starting to get some responses. And I go, okay, now it's ready. So then I go, okay, Danny. And I did this all in my off time outside of work, right? So then I go, Danny, this is the plan. This is the business. This is what we're going to do. And I need you to go to these lists of people, find their email addresses online and email them this cookie cutter kind of canned email and say, hey, we could save you money on this. Go, right? And so he's at home doing that. And I went to my cell phone provider and I said, hey, I need another phone. But I didn't have a lot of extra money. So I go, just give me the cheapest free phone you got. So they gave me this flip phone, like old brick looking flip phone. And this is just three and a half years ago. It's not a long time ago. So they give me this flip phone and I put it on vibrate and I put it in my pocket. And so I go to work every day and he'd be emailing people out from his house, just cold emailing everybody. And we would get responses back on email or we'd get a phone call. We got a phone call. I'd be sitting at my desk like this. I'd feel my pocket. And as soon as I'd feel my pocket vibrating, I'd jump up. My desk was right by the door. So I'd jump up. I had my own little office there. So I'd jump up. I'd run out the front door, run. I would actually walk out of the front door and try to look nonchalant. I would just walk out, and as soon as I closed the door, I would sprint around the building to the back, hurry up and get back there, pop open the phone, answer it, Hawk Sourcing, like that, right? Try to answer it before the phone stopped ringing. So that was the early days, and I really want to, again, stop and zoom in on that because that's what it takes. If you're working at a job right now, if you're trying to start something on the side, you've got to figure out how to generate leads. You've got to figure out how to field those leads. And sometimes it takes a simple creative solution like that. By being able to do that, I was able to keep one conversation in particular going for a couple of months and heating that sales conversation up until finally I got to the point where I felt like it was going to close. And it did end up becoming our first
Sale. To close your first sale.
Oh, absolutely. The sales cycle in this business is quite a while because we're reaching out to people that may already have stock in their warehouse 3, 4, 5, 6 months, or they may not be ready. You know, we're reaching out to you. They're not reaching out to us saying, hey, I need to buy some packaging, or hey, I need to buy this, buy that. We're emailing them saying, hey, we can help you save money on this. Now, they may be willing to have that conversation, but that doesn't mean that they're ready to buy.
I thought you were going after first newer businesses who were starting to get into this stuff. Like, it was the founder of Dang. Man, right. Every time I go to an airport and I see Dang or go to a local store, I talk to them. It's this chip, these coconut chips. Every time I see them, I think about how he just went to like Alibaba and he bought for his first packaging. I think he bought a whole bunch of just coconut chips and put them in bags and started selling them. I'm pretty sure that was a story.
Right.
I'm thinking you went after people like that who were just in the experimental stage. No, you were going after people who already had packaging and saying, I could get you a better price. You wanted to save people money, not get them started.
Well, I mean, how would we find people who are getting started?
That's a good point. Right. Where are you going to find those people? That's more like content marketing and teaching people how to get into this stuff. And that's not where you were. You were into, there are people out there who are doing this. I think I can help them do it better.
Right. Now, we're looking at getting that into our funnel now. But at the time, that wasn't going to be an immediate sale.
Got it. And I guess I kind of felt that because, well, how did I end up with Rain here as a guest? I thought maybe part of your process was, let's see if we can go to early entrepreneurs, tell them how this stuff works. And then when they're ready to sign up, they come to us. No, that's not what it was. It was you spending time with them. And then at night, doing what? To get manufacturers in China to work.
Right. And so this is interesting, right? So the first guy that we worked with was the same guy who I had found for the juice company. So the guy who was supplying these bags and supplying, you know, all the other stuff, this guy was a trading company, right? And this is one of the risks of Alibaba. Alibaba is a huge, huge risk for anybody who's trying to start sourcing stuff from overseas because it's very, very difficult to navigate. It's very confusing. You don't know what a trading company is. You don't know what a manufacturer is. And one thing that's really interesting about Alibaba is that somebody can list themselves as a verified manufacturer. Let's say I make this one product. Let's say I make pens. Now, I can list myself as a verified manufacturer. Even if I don't really even sell pens, I'm selling you all kinds of other stuff as just a trading company. But because I verified with Alibaba that I make this pen, now I'm a verified manufacturer.
And then the other stuff that they don't make, they get from somewhere else. And they mark it up a little bit. They have less impact on it. Got it. And you can't tell that they're not really making that. All you know is they make something.
their main product. Well, and you don't even need to know, you don't even know to look for that when you're first getting started. You don't even know what the difference is, as I didn't, right? And so their main product may not even be what they're selling. And a lot of times it's not. Anyway, so I found this guy on Alibaba, didn't even realize he wasn't a manufacturer. This guy starts making all the stuff for the juice company. Surprisingly enough, that all went pretty well most of the time. Very simple, kind of like cut and dry products that almost can't go wrong, could go wrong, but almost can't. And so that's the same guy. I figured, hey, when I start this business, well, I've already got a guy. This guy will sell me anything, right? Anything I ask this guy for a quote for, he's like, yeah, I got it, right? So I'm like, here, all I need is I need this guy. I need a website. Right. I got Danny sending out emails, and now I just need some customers, and we're good to go. And lo and behold, you know, 10 of my first 10 orders went bad.
The first 10?
Because this guy
10.
Had no clue what he was doing. Oh, easy.
And so how did you keep those 10 customers?
Of 10 of 10.
Or did you lose them?
I lost every single one of them. It was one of the most stressful times of my entire life. Was
so
the
why'd you stick with the business then?
Let me finish the transition. So basically what happened was it finally got to a point where I could not stand being at that job anymore. You know, the relationship between me and this guy had deteriorated. We just really didn't like each other. And so I knew I had to go. So I got laid off. I was really hoping to get laid off. I was employee of the month, 1 month, next month, you know, he saw that I wanted out of there. He wanted me out of there. So the play it safe way was to lay me off. So that way there's no like, you know, legal, wrong.
Because layoff means I can't afford to keep you. That's why we're doing it. It's right. Basically it's not you, it's me.
Right. And I knew this because I fired everybody with him. Like I knew what he was doing, but it was mutual. It was absolutely mutual. There was nothing. Yeah. And I didn't even know because I'd never been on unemployment that if you don't get laid, if you get fired, I was really hoping to get fired, but if you get fired, you don't get unemployment. And I was going to need that unemployment because I didn't have any money.
And because he laid you off, you don't
and
get.
So I was really lucky.
Oh, got it. Yeah. I thought that's why you wanted to be fired. No.
I wanted to be fired so I would get unemployment, but I didn't even know that's not how it works. You have to get laid off. If you get fired,
unemployment. You get unemployment if you get fired. Okay, but basically you
Look,
got.
I'm not trying to be a pro.
I just want you to know. But basically, you're saying you got unemployment, and so.
Right. So I got unemployment, and he gave me my last check, and he gave me another check, and I just figured with the unemployment that I was going to get, and with these checks, I had about 3 months that I could go before I ran out of money. You know, based on my monthly bills and all this shit. So I left, and I was super excited to just really get going full time on Hawk, and me and Danny just worked out of my house. We were, you know, he showed up the first day that I, you know, was gone from that job, and we plopped our butts in my couch and we just worked our butts off, sending out as many emails as we could, fielding as many leads as we could. And it was about 2 weeks later after I left my job that, I got a FedEx envelope came to the door one day. My girlfriend goes and gets the FedEx envelope, brings it to me. I was still in bed and I opened it up and it was a $14,500 check. Absolutely the best money and the best moment of my entire life, because that was proof of concept. That was Eureka. We struck gold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so that's what kept you going. The idea that if you got one check like that, you can get others.
I knew when things were going wrong that I always knew the business model made sense. You couldn't convince me that people weren't making things properly in China. It couldn't be that all of China had quality control because look how much stuff is made in China. So it couldn't have been that it doesn't work in China, which people did try to tell me, oh, you can't make stuff in China. It's all bad. No, it's not all bad. More than half the shit you have in your house is from China. They know how to make good products. I just didn't have the right setup. And I just knew I needed to keep working on my setup.
Meaning find the right people to do this for you.
Right. I just didn't have the right manufacturer in place. Little did I know, I didn't even have a manufacturer in place. And I finally figured that out. And this is the same guy, by the way, that robbed me for $20,000 later on.
So you just lucked out that the first order you sent him ended up being good. It just happened that it was not for you, but for a company you were working for who you just didn't like.
And he ran orders for that company while I was there. I ordered from him maybe 3-4 times and there was never an issue with those couple of products. But yeah, it was funny. It was like, I thought I had it all figured out because I'd done these runs with this guy and it was all good. And yep, soon as I got started, it was just nothing but problems. And oh, it was the most stressful thing. So what did I do? If you want me to still answer that, but what did I do? I everything was from the heart, man. I wanted so badly. I'm a people pleaser. All I want is for people to be happy. I wanted to save people money. I wasn't trying to scam anybody. It really, it hurt me so bad when things would go wrong. I'd build these great relationships with people during the sales process, and they'd be so excited to be working with us, and they'd be so excited to get their stuff, and it would just be the biggest letdown when they get it and it wasn't right. And it just killed me. So I would do whatever I could, depending on the issue. Some issues were worse than others, and I'd say, here's a discount on that, and let's try to remake it. And then we'd remake it, and it would be bad again, and I'd say, look, here's your money back. You know, so it was really just a lot of refunds. And I don't know if you believe in God. I'm a spiritual person. And really, when I think back about how many things went wrong and how much money we gave back, I have no clue. I have no clue how we made it.
Let me ask you this.
We gave so many refunds.
What's the website for the company?
It's Hawk Packaging now. At the time, it was Hawk Sourcing.
I went to a similar web. I punched in Hawk Packaging. It said nothing. We're just not in our database. I said, okay, fine. I went to Ahrefs, where I go to see people's SEO strategy. Almost nothing. One page shows up at top pages. Something called hawkpackaging.com/team/Michael Hallbrook. I go, Michael Hallbrook, who's that? I click over. Michael Hallbrook is listed as a co-founder. I say, a co-founder. I go over to hawkpackaging.com/team. I see Stephen Adams is a co-founder. Timothy Schroeder is a co-founder. Michael Hallbrook is a co-founder. Christopher Evans is a co-founder. Who are these guys?
I think there's a Hawk Packaging in New Zealand or something.
Do you guys have hawkpackaging.com?
Yeah.
I got one.
I've never heard of those people.
Wow, that's...
I know that if I look up Hawk Packaging, I do see somebody else in like New Zealand. And I think they had like some litigation or something, but I don't
but
even know any
Hawk
of those people.
Hawkpackaging.com. And at the top of it is salsa para untar is one of the samples. Yeah.
Yep.
That's weird.
Let me see.
I'm going to send you a link to this thing.
Yeah.
Here, I'll send you a link right now in Zoom chat. Here we go. Go into chat.
Okay, let's see.
The problem with Zoom chat is nobody could ever find the chat. There it is.
I know. And I use this thing every day and I don't know where the chat, there it is. Okay. Hawkpackaging.com/team.
And that's like the best SEO page on the whole page, on the whole site.
You know what it is? I bet I know what this is. CTO. Why would we have a chief technology officer? I think when I had the guy, this is so funny because I've never seen this until now. This is insane. We recently redid our website like about 5-6 months ago, and I hired this guy in Pakistan to do it. And I think maybe the template or something that
came with
used,
these photos.
This was in the template. I don't even know how you got to hawkpackaging.com/team. I have to go into the WordPress admin thing and see if this page is there and like delete it or something. I had no clue.
Or maybe just replace it with your own, because according to Ahrefs, that actually is your top page on the whole site. Maybe even more than the whole page. They're saying it's worth less than $1. I like that they always give me a value for pages. And then the other thing that I see when I go to them is you don't have a lot of backlinks. You should be doing more interviews like this. You've got a lot. You got a touching personal story. We didn't get back into like your mom went from rags to riches back to rags. We'll save that for you to tell on another podcast. But I feel like all those things will help you a lot. But the other interesting thing that comes on from Hawk Packaging on Ahrefs is that nuttyredhead.com is one of your best backlinks. What is that for?
That's a customer. I think she has a list of her vendors or something. And she
there you go. She's listing everything. Packaging design, packaging manufacturing, the whole thing.
Yeah. But I mean, when you don't have any backlinks, everything shows up. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. For some people, there's so much content created around their business. For us, it's become such a, the relationship and the communication is so handled over email. We don't even get on the phone very often. Our phone doesn't ring a ton. We handle so much business over email. It's really this cold email process of us reaching out to people, sending them samples. They send us their details. We go back
because you're going
forth
after people who already have businesses. I think it'd be interesting if you could get into the world of people who are just getting started and need you, right? Totally. They're Googling around. They're saying, who can I make this packaging for me? Boom. They come up with you. You got an interesting story. You got an interesting business model, right? The whole thing is fascinating. Right. And then they reach out to you. They trust you because they get to know your background. They say, all right, I'm ready to go. And this is the guy who's going to get me started. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, look, there's a guy, I won't mention him, but there's a guy who creates video content around flexible packaging. And he's pretty much the only competition out there. And I know that if I start pumping videos about every single thing that has to do with flexible packaging, I'll shoot to the top immediately because there's no competition. I mean, this isn't the hippest business you could be in,
more,
right?
I think it's becoming more of a thing. That there are people who want to start businesses for whom creating physical products is a point of pride. And it's a bigger opportunity than just creating software right now.
Right. I mean, the great thing about the packaging business is everybody needs packaging. It's one of those mandatories. You would let your lights get cut off in your office before you didn't buy
your
packaging.
I do feel like more and more businesses now are becoming like Shopify stores. They need their own packaging on their stuff.
Right.
What do you see is actually doing especially well that we may not be aware of? You're a guy who sees who needs to get a lot more packaging than other people. Is granola the biggest thing?
Granola's killing it. There's a lot of people starting granola companies because it's a low barrier to entry, right? Anything that's a low barrier to entry is
but then
growing,
how, like what?
Right? Because people will start
businesses.
Why is
granola such a low barrier to entry? Is it hard? Is it easy to make granola at home? You just take oats
Absolutely.
And you toast it?
Yeah, I mean, basically.
And add a few other things to it?
I think people do make batches of granola for themselves at home. Now you can take that and put it in a printed bag and it's a business.
Got it. So like the Andrew Healthy Granola. This is, I ran a marathon on every continent eating this granola. That's the thing that now
That's
becomes.
It. Dude, it's like, granola is like wine. It's really about the story, right? Like there's some that are better than others for sure. And we get lots of samples and I've had some that'll blow your socks off. It's not that there's just, it's not a commodity. But you know, with so many to choose from and without, you know, customers don't get to taste every single granola before they pick one. So a lot of marketing is about the story, you know, more than it is about the product, and the packaging is about the marketing. And so
I thought you were going to say it was more of the powdery stuff, like the stuff that comes in your flat pouches. That's not it, huh?
I mean, coffee's always going to be big. Superfoods and powders are always big. Protein and stuff like that is big. Candy, all kinds of different creative
like
snacks.
If you and I were
see.
To create,
but by far,
granola by
say,
far. If you and I were to just get creative here and say, we've got to create our own product for the Mixergy audience. We know it's an entrepreneurial, ambitious audience. Yeah. What's the thing that you and I would create and then go put up on a Shopify store?
I would stay the hell away from coffee.
Because everybody's
granola.
Got that. It would need to be something a little, would be interesting? Something like yerba mate, but I think it's been done a lot and people put in tea bags so it loses some of its specialness. Something exotic, international exotic that you can't get anywhere except on.
Well, I'd think about what makes sense to us, right? To what makes sense to your audience, what makes sense to the industry, entrepreneurs, energy, focus, right? So yerba mate could be something that makes sense because you could position it the right way. It's something that actually has
like
value
yerba,
and
but
makes
I wouldn't
sense
want to put it in tea
doing.
Bags. How about this? Something where it's like energy, natural energy that you can eat on the go. We sell in these little pouches. So you don't, right?
That's totally. And you can mix yerba mate powder in anything.
Right.
So maybe you're doing yerba mate infused kombucha or yerba mate infused, coated pretzels. Maybe you make some kind of cool chips or something. I don't know. But I like stuff that's different. I like stuff that's different because it's easier to sell and it's more fun.
I'm with you. And I one of the things that I loved about living in Argentina was discovering yerba mate as a thing that fires me up. I've been traveling a lot this year and I did not try any new food really. I'm
really?
Not that into new food. You know what I'm into? I'm into new people. Like take me out to see new people. I freaking love it. I was just looking at videos that I took from a township in South Africa. Everyone told me don't go to a township. I went to a township. So much freaking fun. See the energy of it all.
Really?
I love I got into Estonia. I was exhausted, out of my mind exhausted. I'm going to go out. And the place that I ended up talking to people was it was a noodle shop. Like this spicy fire noodle. Oh, so good. But I don't
was
care about
good?
The noodles, though the noodles were good because they were spicy. I was talking to this dude. I said, look, on my flight over here, I'm watching videos. I hear that give me a sense of what I can talk to people in Estonia about. I hear that they're not really into getting married. And if I ask people if they're married, it's an insult. But if I ask them if they have an open relationship, it's not. He said, oh, yeah, open relationships are really big here. Nobody has any kind of marriages. wasn't until later that I realized this guy comes from, I forget what conservative country. He comes from a conservative country. He's just there in Estonia. It's like the Middle East, some part of the Middle East, super conservative. He come to Estonia for school. Everybody in Estonia is way like too liberal for him. He's like, I was just like too deep in his world to recognize that he was giving me one perspective, but I freaking loved it. He and I were hanging out talking for hours. It was great.
Awesome. Where are you going next?
Antarctica. By the time this interview is published, I will have been back to Chile, and from Chile taking a plane into Antarctica, and hopefully, not hopefully, I will finish my final marathon of 2019 by the time this interview is done, and people can hear, can stop hearing me talk about Antarctica and running marathons all over the world, and maybe they'll hear me talk about something new. But maybe when I'm in Chile, I'll look for their local food.
Every time I hear you talk about going for another run, I think to myself, damn it, I got to get out and run.
Are you a runner at all? Do you do anything? Do you do anything athletic still?
I work out. I skateboard. I've been a skateboarder for a long time, so I'm into that. And that's where I kind of get my cardio. But when I'm in the mode of running, I run. I'm not like a long distance runner, but I do like to put the headphones in and just go run around the city. That's enjoyable.
It does let you just get out of your mind. Stop thinking. And there's nothing, once you get out far enough, there's not much else you could do. You might as well just keep going. Even if you want to turn back around, it's totally still a bit of a trek.
What's the furthest you've run?
32, 35 miles, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, my God. But that's
a situation where there's no other choice. Olivia dropped me off at the top of Rock Creek Park in Washington, D.C., and I was ready to just run home. That's it.
Do you consider yourself an obsessive person?
I am. I need something to obsess with. Yeah. Are you like that too? Is that why you gave up alcohol? Like, you can't have it in moderation? It's all or nothing. What's an example of you being so obsessive that would shock people?
I don't know. I don't know what would it wouldn't shock me. You know, to somebody who's not obsessive, I think everything is probably shocking.
I should do like a time lapse of all the coffees that I go through. It's like 20 cups of coffee, no problem. But it's all decaf. I just need something to
Holy
do.
Shit.
Even here, I'm sitting here with two cups of, just to have something to do. I'm not a sit still person.
Me neither. I think that's the Persian blood, though. Too,
I don't know. I see Persians are very, very calm. They're always drinking their tea, little tiny. I don't know if you've got. I've got Persian family. They drink tea from these little glass cups that are so tiny for us Americans. They take their time. They put your grandfather put the little sugar thing in his mouth. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. The little
I forget what it's called.
Thing,
it'll come to me in a moment after this.
Yeah.
They're too calm for me. I drive them nuts. All right, Rain. We've talked about a lot here. Congratulations on building up this company. I think you should be doing way more interviews, way more content. You should be out there a lot more. I thought maybe being on here was part of your big social media SEO strategy. It's not. You're just maybe testing the water. You should be doing more of that.
There's two things that I want to, and I can see we're wrapping this up. There's two things I just want to mention, and this won't take us out on a tangent. I think there are types of businesses that people can start if they don't have a lot of money, if they don't have a lot of resources, and they don't have a lot of experience or network or connections or anything. And so I think they're service businesses. So businesses that don't require a lot of money to start, something like organizing people's garages. Everywhere across the country, there are homes and nobody is offering you can Google it right now. I actually thought about starting this company called Garage Guys. Google, try to find somebody who's willing to come to your house and organize your garage. And Craigslist doesn't count. There's no company out there doing that. And if you were to put flyers on every door in your neighborhood that has a garage, somebody's going to call you and pay you $500 to organize their garage. That's a business. And it could be like 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You're going to be hauling stuff, donating stuff.
I freaking love that. The best gift that I can remember that my wife gave me was having somebody come over and organize my closet. I don't want more stuff. Every time somebody gives me more stuff, it takes up more space in my life. I don't want it. Take my stuff out. And don't just do it like take everything and throw it away. Organize the few things that are there.
Right.
Take stuff out. All right, go ahead. So you like these service-based businesses because?
Because you can start it from nothing. And I really want to empower people. And I think people are empowered, but I'd like to help kind of show them the way of like, you can do it. I think there's a lot of, when people talk about how they can start businesses, people ask me all the time, what kind of business can they start? They don't know where to go, what to do. I think people overcomplicate it, trying to invent things and stuff that costs a lot of money or technology. That's all good. But if you don't have money to at least create an MVP or something, you know, or a network,
you consider your business to be a service business or what?
I guess, yeah, I'd call it a service business. I mean,
people are paying you, you're going and sourcing this stuff for them, and then you get recurring revenue because every time they need new product, as long as your price is good, as long as the quality still maintains, you get recurring revenue from it.
And I didn't have to have a penny to start it. I spent $75 to start the website, but I get paid. I take that money and go overseas, purchase it. And when you don't have money, it has to be that way, you know? And so anyway, so there's stuff like that. And another one that I actually read about the other day that I don't know if people have kind of identified that as a new opportunity that I think is going to be big is cleaning people's solar panels on top of their homes. I hear people are getting like $20 per panel and everybody's got about 6 panels. All you need is a ladder and some Windex. If you wanted to start a business right now, go to everybody's house who has solar panels, put the flyer on their door. Flyers are $20. And if you got 5 jobs a day, 6 panels, $20 is $120, right? Times 5 is $600. You can make $600 a day doing 5 jobs. It probably wouldn't take you more than an hour on each one. $600 times 5 days in a week is $3,000 times about 4 weeks. You make $12,000 a month.
And they get more electricity because it's been cleaned.
That's why it's important. Those things are sitting up there. They get a film on them. Now they're not as effective as they should be. You get up there, you wipe the damn thing down, come once a month or once every couple of months, and that's it. And you're out.
You know what? I had a listener who was using Google Maps to look to see who had solar panels on their houses, I think it was, and who had sun that was going in so he could sell them solar equipment. Can you do that on Google Maps? Can I go to Google Maps? I bet I could find somebody to tell me who has solar panels in the neighborhood. And then you start hitting them up. I'll clean up your solar. This is great. And it's actually easy to then expand beyond this area.
And I would go to anybody who's installing solar panels if they don't offer the service themselves. And I'd make sure they have a stack of their flyers.
I like the way you see. This is why I think you should. I do think you should be out there talking a lot more. Forget, let somebody else do the quotes and the business. I know that part of your push for next year is going to be to get yourself out of the business so you can think more like this.
Yeah, I've done a lot of that. I mean, we've hired some great people and I'm pushing a lot of stuff off and trying to make sure, you know, for the most part, the day-to-day operations is off my plate. But I get a lot of questions still because a lot of these guys are new. We're a new business, which means our people are new. And that means that they still have questions. And so I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, everybody's capable of handling stuff without needing me. And I think they are already. I think there's just that self-doubt that comes along with being able to lean on me because I'm available. And I think if I wasn't available, they'd just figure it out. So I just need to come with you to Antarctica.
They can contact you. There's no cell coverage. Meanwhile, I'm busy now looking on Google Maps. Can I see people's solar panels? I could see if they have solar panels or not. Totally see it. Look at this. I'm looking through my home neighborhood where I can actually look at the tops of people's homes. They blur out their backyards, which is kind of interesting. And I could see, there's someone who has solar panels right there. This is great. All right.
I wonder if you could even do like a mailer list or something
I bet there's like something that I could use to figure out who has solar panels and just run Google Maps to it. Yeah, look at this. This is on, I didn't even know there was a Presida Avenue, but on Presida Avenue, there's somebody who's got this small set of solar panels. And if I keep going, I could see other people. All right. I'm done with this. Oh, look, here's another one. Presida Avenue. Second person who's got, no, third person. I guess Presida Avenue is really big.
There's your $600 today, bro.
Clean it up and I'll get you. And then tell me who, now I'm going in that direction, that business.
The obsession just kicked in. Leave it alone. But anybody listening, I think a lot of people listen to these podcasts. I think you got people who are running larger businesses, but I think a lot of them are trying to figure it out, starting running small businesses, looking for an opportunity, trying to get inspiration. Those two ideas, organizing garages or cleaning people's solar panels, or do both. You could do that in any residential neighborhood across the country right now. Literally, if I had nothing to do right now, I would be doing that.
You like that better than software, better than hardware?
No, I'm going to talk to you about something after we get off the call.
Like you got a software company? Okay, yes. All right, that's the other thing. All right, the website is hawkpackaging.com/team. That's where you're going to go see the four men behind the business.
Come on, man, don't do that to
me. Come on, that would be our own inside thing.
Okay, fine.
Hawkpackaging.com/team. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. Number one, if you need a phone for your team, please go over to ringcentral.com/mixergy. Look, I'm not even following my own sign. ringcentral.com/mixergy. ringcentral.com/mixergy. And I really want to thank the people behind ClickFunnels for making my business so much bigger. It's clickfunnels.com/mixergy. Thank you all for listening. Bye, everyone.